Less than 3 minutes, and they were pulling up at a neat little detached house with trees, giving it a rare bit of privacy. 20 Canterbury Road, Miranda read. Looks nice, Cav.
It'll do. I'll only be a second. Make sure nobody pinches the motor.
And then the DI was out and running toward the side of the house. He disappeared inside, and they waited gloomily. Miranda Evans started to whistle tunelessly, one of her more irritating habits, one she indulged in when nervous. Somehow things did not seem quite right. She felt little alarms probing, and Dennis Tyler did not seem able to sit still. Then the DI was suddenly out of the house, yelling at them from his back door.
"Get in here, quick, help me!"
He ducked back into the house. Dennis Tyler was the first in. He ran down the short passage, through the kitchen, and into a long front room. As he got into the room, he thought, funny, he's had all his furniture nicked. Dennis got the impression of a sharp pain in his right shoulder, had a sense that someone was bearing down on him, then lost the entire plot for the remains of the day. Something similar happened to Miranda Evans just inside the back door, but she got quite a vivid picture of what was going on. She knew that W.D.S. Collins had grabbed her wrist, and she actually saw the throwaway hypo being jabbed into her upper arm, right through her jacket and blouse. Collins took on the form of a vampire, and Miranda tried to shrink away. "I've got to remember this," she thought, as the darkness came over her, and she slid into a peaceful slip. "I must remember."
"Upstairs," said Ronnie. "I'll get her upstairs and shackle to the radiator. With any luck, they'll both be out for 5 or 6 hours."
He lugged the young policewoman up the stairs while Tessa went back to the car. When he'd safely stowed the girl away in the front bedroom, cuffed to the radiator, he went down and dragged Dennis Tyler up to the second bedroom. He pulled the policeman's jacket down behind his back, removed the pistol from his belt, and cuffed his hands. When they'd first come to the house with the real estate agent on the previous Saturday, they had pleaded to be allowed to keep the keys. "We'd like to come in over the weekend and on Monday morning," Ronnie had said.
"I really need to do some serious measuring."
Tessa had been very Irish, very touchy-feely with the agent, who had picked them up by car at the Regent Palace. Reception had rung them in their room. They would be ideal buyers, the agent thought. People with money. They talked about having rooms for the 2 ponies and 2 cars.
"Our drawing room furniture in the corner cupboard will be lovely in this room," Tess had purred. "And we could have the Turner over the mantelpiece, over the Adam fireplace. It would look lovely."
The agent got hopeful. He particularly liked people who talked about drawing rooms.
"You ought to get an Academy Award," Ronnie told her later. "Bloody Academy Award you should have. Effing marvellous."
On the Sunday, on the way back from Heathrow, they'd stopped off and hidden the handcuffs and chains in the 2 bedrooms, in the cupboards, so that they would be ready on the Monday. Now Ronnie ran a piece of metal chain up through the cuffs and used a 3rd set of handcuffs to secure Tyler to the hanging fixture in the built-in wardrobe. Back in the master bedroom, he picked up the Heckler & Koch that he'd removed from the anaesthetized WDC, slipped it in his waistband, went downstairs, let himself out, and locked the door behind him. "So far," he thought, "it's worked like a charm." Richardson believed that you could get away with anything if you exuded confidence and carried the right kind of paper. Josh, the forger, had done a fine job with the warrant cards and the letter of authorization. Knockout jobs, both of them. And Richardson was proud of his own contribution on the telephone. Ronnie had telephoned the Nick and told them there had to be some changes made, and who the hell did they think they were?
"Because I'm Sergeant Bloody Vosper," he yelled down the phone. "And you better look smart about it."
D.I. Hunter and W.D.S. Collins were bringing Tyler and Evans back to the Nick, he told them. They were to ring Sergeant Randolph at the Thames Valley HQ at Kidlington. See how many men they'd contributed to the Heathrow operation, then get back to him.
"They believed," Ronnie said with glee. "They really believed me. All that gobbledygook, and they believed it."
He had the Rover cruising down the M4 now, heading out to Heathrow, and nobody could stop them. If the Russian aircraft was on time, nobody would question anything. Ronnie knew exactly what he was doing. Tess would sit back, and he'd warned her about the moment of death, that second when the light goes out. The target is there, then gone, in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. He quite forgot that she'd seen it all in the Villa Mirta the night he'd blown poor old Lenny Saxby away. Ronnie Richardson was getting the buzz. It always happened when he was close to a kill, the buzz, almost like the high you got waking up from being anaesthetized, a bit surreal, a shade drunk. It was the sense of power. It was the feeling of being Almighty God. And he hoped God would grant the Russian absolution for all his sins. This is the day of absolution, he thought, the day of forgiveness. They came off at the Heathrow exit, then headed off on the slip road toward Terminal 4. The Royal Suite is a little past Terminal 4, a long, low building with a hard standing for the aircraft just off the taxiway. Ronnie had spent hours wrestling with the problem of how he could dispatch the Bortunians with some privacy. He needed to get them alone and within sight of an escape for himself and Tess. Needed that situation for a shade less than 2 minutes. He thought the Bortunians would be locked up tight all week, so he had to get them now at the beginning, or leave it to the end. There would be no other chances. When he was a little boy, his mummy had said to him, "Ron, in this world you have to make your own luck. Nobody else will do it for you. You have to do it for yourself." Ron was doing it for himself now. Hold back, get them in the car, keep pace with everyone until the motorway, then put your foot down and go. The escort would never know what he was doing. The radio would be off, the road already cleared. He knew which way to take them, had the other car waiting. It was all so close that he could never lose. They wouldn't even get a chopper up in time. In his pocket, Ronnie had the card with the Shakespearean quotation written on it. "This will last out a night in Russia, when nights are longest there." Measure for measure. Ronnie had been right. A minimum disguise, he thought. Late last night he got Tessa to cut his hair and shave it right down, just in case the chauffeur's cap got knocked or blown off. He wore wraparound sunglasses, but nothing else by way of pretense. Tessa was a slightly different case. He had chosen the wig himself, thick, short, but very blonde. She looked almost Nordic. The wig did the job, changed her entirely. No problem there.